Hello and welcome back to How We Roll Podcast. My name is Joe Tree and I am the DM tonight, and I am torturing my players with the delightful joys of Barovia and Curse of Strahd. And before we descend back into the mist, let's do just a few introductions. So welcome back to the show, Dave. How are you and who are you playing tonight?
Drunk. And I am playing Erich Godson Nachthammer. I have rediscovered the joy of how we roll, getting sozzled and playing games, which is, I think, the core of all good D&D games. Yes, I am barely alive, barely undead, barely skeletal, barely clinging to my bones. Trying to save Irina, just for a change.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I feel that we've actually kind of got the story back on track. It's going really well.
What?
So welcome back to the show, Lisa. How are you doing? And who are you playing tonight?
I am good. I am not sozzled, but I wish that I had a cold something in my hand. Besides apple juice here, I'm exhausted. I'm playing...
It's really whiskey.
I wish it was fortified apple juice. I wish it was. I am playing Viesa Ralinthos. She is a cleric druid, level 7, as we decided last game and reminded me.
Definitely decided last game. And can I ask, like, a completely random, completely non-D&D related question, which is probably stupid. So, in England, we call what I've always called cider, like, what would be like an alcoholic drink.
Right.
But in America, is it right that you have soft cider and hard cider? So are you drinking cider?
I can answer this question. Cider was almost exclusively alcoholic, the same as it is in England, until the Prohibition. And in Prohibition,
Lisa's
apple growers, to save their...
I'm nodding. Yep, this is it. No, I really love all this stuff.
To save their income, did like huge advertising campaigns on the health benefits of drinking apple juice and still called it cider. So when cider was when Prohibition fell, cider drinking as an alcoholic beverage kind of died in America until very recently. That's why most American ciders suck ass. But when you do find alcoholic cider, it's called hard cider.
It is. I am a fan of woodchuck, which is an East Coast.
Yeah, woodchuck's not
bad. East Coast cider in America.
I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but that's cleared up. Just a weird thing.
And also, apple juice and apple cider are different in America because apple juice is filtered, and apple cider, for the most part, is not filtered and much more delicious.
It's cloudy apple juice.
Yeah, it's so good.
Cider.
So you can go up like an hour from me on these beautiful mountains. You can drive in the fall, and they've all got this little apple orchard, so you can get apple butter and fresh pressed apple cider right there for you. And it's so delicious.
Apple juice is like my favorite thing.
It's amazing.
We know, we rarely have a little bourbon, you know, fortify your juice. Keeps the scurvy away.
I do apologize for that distraction, but that has cleared up something I've wondered about. You know, when you're kind of watching American TV or reading like a random book and you're just like,
they're feeding their kids cider.
What are they talking about? Yeah. So thank you for that. So Niall, welcome back to the show. Do you have an opinion on cider, or should we?
So in Ireland, we feed our kids cider, but it is alcoholic cider.
Don't mess around.
I personally don't like cider, Sláinte. I can't stand the taste of it. I think it tastes horrible.
We have subscribed to Cider Facts.
But anyway, outside of that, I'm Niall.
Oh, wow. That was...
It's been a while since we had one of those funny...
Welcome to Concrete Facts by David Honecker.
My name is Niall, and I am playing Voron Elar, a wizard, who is... potentially a ghoul now after the last episode. I'm a level 7 flesh-eating wizard, a half-elf too, although maybe
very cool,
we'll see.
Well, maybe not, we'll see. So on the last episode we did manage to move the story on a surprising amount for us, actually, which is really good. So we returned to I almost started on more side effects. No focus. We return to Erich, who had somehow found himself at the top of an enormous tower after transporting himself through a portal inside Rictavio's chest. He landed on the tower, and the whole tower kind of rocked around him. It's that unstable, and he found himself alive again in his body, although incredibly depleted. In fact, he immediately took on 5 levels of exhaustion because his body was hungry and thirsty and starved. Lying next to him was the unconscious Irina. He did manage to explore the tower a bit. He saw a very worrying and ominous-looking suit of armor. And while he was searching around, he fell through the floor, fell down 3 levels onto the ground, didn't die, and luckily didn't cause the tower to collapse, which does cause, as we discussed in the last episode, 24 d10 points of damage if he had done. He then managed to make his way outside the tower and saw a strange sight. The tower itself is built on an island, a mossy island, and at the edge of the island is a long causeway, hundreds of feet long, across an enormous mist-shrouded lake, and the causeway disappears off into the mist and hopefully a shore in the distance. Meanwhile, Viesa and Voron made it out of Vlaki on their broom. They left the devastated town behind them and made a decision to follow the road to the southwest in the direction of Kresk and somewhere called the Selenka Pass. The weather began to turn extremely cold and thundery. Behind them in the distance, there did seem to be thunder brewing around Castle Ravenloft, and did wonder what Saf was getting up to there. And I will say the players still have no idea what happened to Saf and no medic in that story. So... you, the listeners at home, have way more idea what they're up to.
True.
And then the last thing that we saw with Viesa and Voron was they were looking for somewhere to rest, and they saw a green glow from one side into the forest, and they decided to head in that direction. But we're going to continue with Dave, with Eric. So the last thing that happened to you is you left the circumference of the island, you took one step off the island, and your flesh faded away, and you were returned to your skeletal undead form. What you'd been heading toward, dragging Irina behind you, was this covered wagon. Now, the covered wagon is completely covered in mud, although it does seem very well-built and ornate, and it is half on the causeway and half off the causeway.
Just for my benefit, how long is the bridge between the island and the further shore?
So it's long enough that you actually can't see the distance. So you can see about 100 feet into the mists. It is getting dark. So at least 100 feet, but probably more.
So it's an extremely long bridge heading off into nowhere.
Yes.
And there's this covered wagon is on the bridge.
Yeah, just where the island meets the bridge. And the wagon is actually half on the bridge and half off the bridge. The bridge itself isn't made of wood or anything, it's a causeway, so it's been made out of stone and earth piled up to form this bridge.
As I sort of continue to approach, as I move my way around this covered wagon, is there anything hitched to it, or is it just...
That is a really good question. So first of all, give me an investigation roll. Because of the particular way that you formed that question, you can do it with advantage.
That is a 19.
So you notice 2 things, both of which are particularly strange.
Oh, wait, no, sorry. That's a 12.
Oh, okay.
Investigation, not intimidation.
You're intimidating the area. Show me.
Okay, so you notice 1 thing. when you're investigating the wagon at the front, there is a seat, but there is nowhere that you can see where there would be anywhere to hitch a horse or any kind of pack animal. Like I'm not a wagon expert. I'm not a pilgrim. I don't really know how this thing works. I think in a previous episode, I had to ask someone what reins were.
You never played Oregon Trail.
No, I never played Oregon Trail. But whatever, like, I have to a caravan. You know that bit where you have to attach your caravan to a car? So I have been on a caravan, I don't own a caravan. Anyway, yes. That bit is missing. So the normal machinery that you would find to link a horse to the wagon is missing.
Traces,
them.
So there's not even a place... So there's not that... Normally you'd have the 2 parallel... now, this is where my technical language fails. Normally you'd have 2 long bits of wood sticking out from the front on axles, to then which... all the leather attachments to the horse's harnesses would be attached. Even those are missing. So there's nothing.
So that's like, missing. So like all there is at the front is a seat. So there's like a seat as if someone would sit there and drive the wagon, but there is literally nothing else that you would normally expect.
No reins.
No reins. No leatherwork. No, just a seat.
Okay. Other than being covered in mud, what's the condition of the wagon? Is it rusted? Is it clean and greased?
Very well built. And in fact, it seems to have a tracery of runes around it. And when you kind of examine the seat, that is where there is a particular number of magic ornamentation. And whether it's just ornamentation or whether it's actually powerful, you're not sure. Because at this point, where this part of the wagon is it's on the island. And as soon as you kind of get to that point, your flesh attaches itself again and you are incredibly weak. And that pressure that you feel is all around you.
Okay. I want to investigate the runes.
Okay. So the standard would be to give me an arcana roll. But because you're under so much like magical pressure and you're basically turned back into your living form, you find that you can't concentrate. You're just so hungry. You'd roll at disadvantage.
That's a and that one.
It says swagger wagon in Infernal.
So with a nat one, I think that maybe you're kind of like getting really close to it and you just like lean far too close and you just lose your balance and just collapse off the wagon.
Thunk.
Straight on the ground. Thunk.
Oh, scheiße. I'm going to walk to the sort of drag my barely flesh ridden bones to the part of the wagon that is off the island. Then with my boner power, I'm going to then try and drag the wagon off the island entirely.
Does it? So what I'm going to ask you to do is give me a strength check.
That's 16.
16. We'll do it. So like but it doesn't come easily. No, because he said he came off the island.
Oh, he came off the island? Cool.
Yeah, so you're pulling the wagon, and it is not easy by any way, shape, or form. And as you pull it, something thuds. So at the back of the wagon where you're pulling, there is a set of doors. And as you pull...
So is the wagon facing the island then?
So as you pull on it, something keeps on thudding against the doors. There's something very, very heavy is thudding every time you pull, like it's leaning up against the doors. And I want you to give me a perception check if you can gather anything about what's inside the wagon right up against these doors.
9?
Yeah, you're not sure. You're definitely something there, but you're not sure.
Okay. Right. Having felt that, like, I did feel the sort of bizarre, a sort of non-linear force of jostling as I was pulling back, and something seemed to be hitting it from the side.
From the inside of the door. So like almost like there's something heavy up against the inside of the door, like placed right against the inside of the door. And every time you pull it, it bumps back and forth.
So as soon as it's all on the causeway, I'll poke my head around the side and start to head towards the side door.
So there's a door at the front and the back. They're the two doors.
All right, so it was a linear force then. Was it opposed? So is it the front door?
So no, it's the door that you're pulling against. So right up against the back.
Okay. Then just stepping back and wondering, I open the door that's just in front
so
of me.
So it is locked.
It is locked. I pull out my falchion. And I sort of I shove it into the crack between the door and the frame and start to pry it open.
Okay, so just give me that strength roll. You can give me a sleight of hand if you're trying to do it and more like trying to like jimmy it open. If you want to force it open, do that.
Yeah, no. I rolled a 9.
Okay, so you pull against
digital it. Digital dice are not favoring it.
And you find that it doesn't open on your first pull, but you hear that kind of like thump again. And I'll let you give me another, I'll let you roll another perception roll.
It's 17.
17, okay. So whatever these are, they seem to be jugs. Like there's definitely a ceramic sort of clinking sound. And there's also like a glug from each one, as if there's some sort of liquid inside these containers.
I get out my warhammer, and I smash the lock.
Okay, I think you can probably do that. So you can smash it. Let's consider the lock smashed. Can you just give me an athletics roll, just to see how badly you've smashed the door?
But badly. That's a 26.
Quite badly.
Okay. Okay. So as your warhammer crashes through the carefully prepared booby trap of many dozens of bottles of alchemist fire. There is a moment of silence, then an implosion before an incredible explosion. The world turns white as a conflagration of epic proportions engulfs the area with everything within 30 feet of the wagon.
Oh my god.
As you are blown back, I need you to take a constitution saving throw.
This is why Eric shouldn't be left alone to his own devices.
Eric was thinking booze. Right. Constitution save. There we go. Constitution. It's a plus two. That's an eight.
So an eight. Oh. Okay, so you take full damage. So can you give me... I'll let you do this yourself. So you like to roll 10d10 damage.
So Eric is dead.
Yeah, unless this is incredibly lucky, we're on health saves.
So remember, you are your skeletal body.
35%, yeah, but 35 hit points.
Joe's eyes just go, oh boy.
71 damage?
71 damage.
6, 7, 10, 8, 7, 7.
So that's not instant death. Because you would have to get, you'd have to get to minus 65. So you're not quite there yet. But we are on death saves. And I think this is probably a really good point to flick the camera over.
I just love the image of Eric being blown off this thing. As, you know, all that's left is his beard. And that just slowly singes away as he flies through the air. His armor obviously just polished to a shine by the explosion, and his bones slowly eroding.
Oh no, at first I was kind of imagining this a bit like Terminator 2, you know, with Sarah Connor in her dream up against the nuclear explosion. But I think that you are blown into the, sort of 60 feet into the lake, and the last thing we hear as we change scene and the screen goes black is this splash as you descend into the watery depths.
The last thought that passes through my empty cranial space is, at least I don't need to breathe.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. He's a skeleton. He does not need to breathe.
Yeah.
He can just take a walk.
And Joe's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Bottom of the lake.
I mean, you've got another character made up, haven't you? So that's fine. So meanwhile, not that far away, as the crow flies, or as the raven flies, which maybe is more appropriate for Curse of Strahd, Voron and Viesa are descending towards a eerie green light which they've just seen amongst the evergreen boughs of the Svlak forest south of the road to Kresk and Slenka Pass. So you begin to descend towards it through the trees, and you get to a point where really the trees are far too dense and you can't descend directly. So you kind of go down where you can, you find a gap, and with the heavy pine trees above you and the soft pine floor below, you land and look around. There is now no sign of the green light at all. It's almost like it wasn't there. but not too far away, where the green light seemed to be emanating from, is a small stone grotto in the side of the hill. And in front of the stone is like an obelisk, which is covered in runes.
Let's go investigate.
Okay, well, we will... Let's approach quietly and see if we can find anything.
Yes, we've still got Pass Without a Trace active. Mm-hmm. And did we see that explosion at all? Did we get any sense? Not close enough.
There's no sign of any explosion just yet.
Okay. Does this obelisk look like a road marker or an arcane guardian type?
So the road marker is a good show, actually, but you're actually quite far away from the road. So maybe that's your first thought. But then as you get closer, Viesa, to maybe your joy, you notice these as druidic runes, or at least an approximation to them. They're not anything you've come across before, and they're very crude. Certainly when you've the Eladrin druidic runes that come off, and maybe that your clan or grove that that linked to your character background would be way more elegant. These are much cruder. So you can't make out exactly what they say, but I will ask you to give me a religion check to see if you recognize them.
Gladly. But I have no religion. I have a little bit. Just a little bit. Let's do that. All right, here we go.
It's a good way to be.
Oh, as I have said, that was a 7.
So, no, you don't know, you can't read or decipher any of the runes, but there are a few things that you notice. So the few patterns come again and again and again. One of them seems to be a mountain, so a symbol that basically looks just like a mountain or a hill maybe. And the other symbol seems to be a huntress with a bow. And working through the weather-worn carvings, the huntress seems to have been drawn as blind, or at least maybe one-eyed. And as you're kind of like, your fingers are kind of pouring over it, you feel an aura of peace and sort of serenity. This actually feels like one of the naturally safest places that you've been. Like, you just find your kind of flight or fight internal feeling just disappearing, and in fact that feeling of dread that you've been encumbered with, I'll let you roll to see if you can get rid of it, your shadow filled dread. So but you can roll with advantage, so I need a wisdom save.
Okay, I will do that. My wisdom is 4. Oh, thank God. I have advantage. Oh, that was a natural 1 plus 4. This is a 13.
13 is actually not good enough. No, so you're still going to retain those negatives.
Okay. I am going to just roll my...
Just check where they are. So you will get a disadvantage on all saving throws because you're convinced that Barovia is trying to kill you. So this pillar is in front of this little grotto. And now that you've both approached, you can see within the grotto is an ancient, what looks to be like a shrine. There's like a stone table, or an approximacy of such, on which is some dried pie cones. There's a broken horn, like an antler. And there also looks like to be the remains of some rotting food.
I'm going to rush over and as I just roll my fingers around the runes and things, and instantly like kind of autumn leaves kind of fall from my hair, and I kind of breathe deep and I look around, and this is a good place. I really think we should stay here a bit. It's not my people, but it's my people. And I... Please. Can we just stay here a bit?
How does Voron feel here?
I don't think you're as profoundly affected as Viesa, so you don't feel the sense of peace or anything like that, but it's reasonably sheltered. Although you can see the road, you get the impression that probably the road can't see you. It's sort of angled in a way that even if you lit a fire, it probably wouldn't show up against the road just because it's at the base of a hill. So it rises up towards the road. It descends down towards the road. It's a reasonably safe place.
And do I see any signs around of, like, maybe someone that was here, or any signs of habitation, or, like, that someone had moved from here recently?
I think you mentioned your passive investigation role was something like 17 or something
Yeah, 17.
With a scoot around, you notice there is a track that leads from here to the road. So you think, although this has probably not been visited regularly, this is a place that people do come to on occasion.
Okay, so I turn to VSN. We should stay here and rest. I'm going to cast alarm at this path, just so that if anyone comes up, we'll be alerted. And I think we should take some time to rest for sure. And
have you got anything, any way that you'd imagine alarm being cast?
Yeah, I start taking some thread out of one of the, I guess, makeshift bags full of flesh right now, and I basically take some twigs and basically put a kind of wrap it around, stick one in the ground, move along, wrap it around, stick it in the ground, and make almost a kind of a track across in front, very, very close to the ground, but not too low that someone will just step over it easily. And just have a perimeter around the front, I guess, half of the grotto area down. That's the road that's facing towards the road.
So actually, you've set almost quite a nice non-magical trap as it is, and maybe you passed your hand across it and the threads turn to like a silvery,
almost translucent,
give it a silvery
maybe,
glow, so and then disappear almost. So they are still there, but then they're almost completely invisible, and it now acts as an alarm spell. That's really cool.
If that goes off, I'm alerted, and a mental alarm, like a ping, wakes me up, and I'm aware. I settle down to meditate and rest for a while. Unless you want to do anything else, Fiesta.
Can we see in that grotto, or is it an actual cave? I have to go in.
It's a little grotto, so it's like a little cave. It's not particularly deep. It basically has enough room for maybe you and Voron to be inside. It's got this little altar or table. I will say that we are approaching winter in Barovia, so without a fire, Viesa is really going
to
struggle.
So I say to Viesa, you go inside the grotto and make yourself a fire. I'm okay out here. I can keep a watch. Because of my condition, I am not affected so much by all this. Also, I know I smell.
You're fine. You're fine. I'm sure it's all gonna be fine. And you have a snack, so I'm gonna go in here. And I'm going to, but I can keep myself warm, so I'm going to turn into a big bear.
Nice.
So I don't have to have a campfire. I'm gonna eat some berries. I'll forage for some roots and berries and stuff and nuts if I can find any. And then I will go in there and hibernate myself.
Okay, give me that survival roll. Let's see what you can find.
Ooh. Okay. Oh, that's, I'll be fine, she says. Let me see what this roll is. Plus seven is, nine.
Oh boy.
So,
but I can make myself a good bear if I have to.
That's fine. The winter forest is so, just seems devoid of any animals. You don't find any edible bushes or anything like that.
Yeah. I keep thinking I'm back home where berries and nuts are everywhere, but I say that in bear, so it just sounds like...
Yep. Okay.
Mechanically, should we take a long rest?
I think both of us only need to do a 4-hour rest because we are... Faye, we can do a meditation.
Fantastic. And then for a little bit, I want to try to study that scroll of flying.
Let me just check how 5e scrolls work. If the spell is on your class's spell list, you can read the scroll and cast the spell without providing any material components. Otherwise, the scroll is unintelligible.
Apparently, my bear needs readers. She needs some cheaters. She can't really read it. She's just a bear kind of going... frustrated bear noises emanate from the grotto.
And actually, if you were lower level, you'd actually have to make a spellcasting ability to cast it. And if you failed, the scroll disappears with
yeah.
no effect.
Yeah, it just so burns it in your hand.
So unfortunately, I don't think you can cast it.
Okay. But I'll have a nice, I'll have a nice little furry warm nap.
So, well, I mean, Voron, you take out the ancient Tome of Strahd. Now, this is an ancient book bound in black leather. On the front is a stylized raven embossed on there and raised. But when you open the book, it is completely unintelligible. You start kind of deciphering the code and you start seeing patterns. And then when you kind of look back at the code to see what you'd deciphered, you realize that it is now changed. It wasn't the letters that you'd originally looked at or the code. So it seems to be actively working against you. Although you can't actually see the letters change yourself, whenever you've gone back to check things or like made notes or things like that, they don't match. And it's confusing and frustrating. So what I want you to do is give me an Arcana roll.
Arcana. Cool, I can do that. That's a 17 plus 7, so a 24.
So you basically realize that this has some sort of enchantment on it, which is basically actively preventing you from reading it. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what you realize is that this book is alive. Now, it's not alive in the way that, you know, that it's you know, it's living and breathing and needs to eat and mate and all the other things that we would define as scientifically alive. I mean that it has an arcane and malignant intelligence, which is empowering it in some way.
Can I try to concentrate on it and communicate with it?
You try that to try and do, you know, the kind of to become attuned to it. You don't believe that would work either. Like it seems to already be attuned to someone and it's actively working against you. However, you do believe that you might be able to, I think the only word I can come up with is activate it using blood.
I take one of the haunches of flesh that I have and just let it bleed onto the book.
Okay, and at this point I need to ask where Lisa is.
VS is going to be in that grotto. Kind of.
So you're quite close by. Okay, so as the blood begins to drip onto the page, the lettering begins to fade until the page is completely blank. And in the center of the page appears a black dot, like just a tiny black dot, but it's completely pitch black. It's not like ink, it's like a void. And that void begins to grow and grow until it fills the book. And then from somewhere below, a speck begins to grow and coalesce until mist begins to pour out of this void, filling the whole area. And you both feel yourself being sucked into the book itself. And you blink, and for a moment everything goes black, and you open your eyes and you find yourself in a sunny forest.
A sunny forest.
And I think I think we will then move over to Eric.
Oh, we're fine. We're out. Great. We're fine.
Okay, Eric, death save number one, please.
Heyo.
Right, how do death saves work?
It's 50-50. So a 1 to 10 is a fail, a 11 to 20 is a pass.
Cool.
It's a
15.
Pass number one.
Joe says with an evil smile.
It's a 12.
12 is a pass, okay.
And a 19.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay. So
Eric is not ready to die.
Okay, so at 2 hours later, your eyes begin to glint with that undead simile of life, and you stare up into a watery darkness. All around you, and obviously you can't feel because you have no skin or flesh, but you can sense these currents moving around you. Below you seems to be the slime-covered base of the lake. But unfortunately, above you is the slime-covered silt of the lake as well. you gather that not only have you reached the bottom of the lake, but the weight of your armor has dragged you deep into the silt. You begin to kind of push against it, and you feel that for a moment nothing happens, and then it gives, and with a slimy plop, you manage to drag yourself up and stare into the watery blackness. Your undead and dwarven dark vision gives you limited view of the base of the lake, which seems to be devoid of life.
I was going to say, I was trying to think of a really clever way to figure out. I can't. Normally, what you do in this situation is you'd exhale and follow the bubbles. That won't work.
You could probably shake your armor, and maybe that dislodges some trapped air.
Yeah. I guess I sort of give myself a good shake and see what. Lift up my arm straight up into the lake and see if there are any bubbles.
Okay, I think we'd probably dislodge some bubbles. What would you be looking for? Just the direction of up, or would that, do you think?
The direction of up, I think.
Oh yeah, I think that's very clear to you now, although it's hard to see the bubbles. Unfortunately, you're not very buoyant as a skeleton dressed in plate mail. So I think a long walk is what's going to be ahead of you now.
Do I see any inclination in the direction of the... Now that I can see up, do I see like an up... a way that's sort of clearly up from where I am now, or is it just sort of generally flat?
I think the silt is making it very hard to judge, so I think you're kind of almost like knee-deep in this silt, and I think you can kind of, yeah, you can kind of figure out a direction. I think what you're worried about is that you're heading deeper into the lake or in a direction that's going to take you off, you know, for, you know, weeks of walking.
On the floor of the lake, do I see vegetation?
There does seem to be a slimy kind of kelp, long sort of strands that bind together and catch in your armor and make it quite hard to walk when you approach one of these sort of kelp forests.
Is it getting thicker in any particular direction?
Give me a perception.
Because obviously the closer it is to the sun, the thicker the vegetation. 18.
So it's not immediately evident, and in fact it probably takes quite a while of walking, but you're kind of maybe working and increasingly maybe starting a spiral, heading outwards, trying to figure which way is thicker. And you think that you may be found in a direction that seems to be possibly heading to an edge.
I head in that direction.
So an indeterminate amount of time passes.
Just getting pictures of Pirates of the Caribbean, all of them walking.
That's why I said you pull a full-on yes. Davy Jones, just like Pirates of the Caribbean. You're just taking a walk.
And you'd kind of found yourself in a trance, and actually kind of images of your past life sort of flash before your eyes, both your adventures in Barovia and your life before. And you're kind of broken out of your trance by a voice saying, Eric, wake up. What are you doing? And your eyes kind of flash for a moment, and you realize that you're still in the lake, but in front of you is the glowing figure of the ghostly form of Sergei von Zarevich, the ghostly figure that had advised you to break into the chest in the first place.
Yeah. I am walking on the edge and on the bottom of a lake. What the fuck does it look like I'm doing?
Where is Irina? Where is she?
Somewhere on the surface, on the bridge.
Oh, Ulrich. Such things, you need to find her. She is in such terrible danger.
Well, why would I ever think to that? Are you sure? It's not like there are, you know, wagons full of explosives lying around.
Never mind the wagons, Victavio is after her.
And why is that?
So he actually heads off in a similar direction to the way you've been heading, but actually just at an angle.
This way, follow me. Victavio believes that if he slays Irina, it will return Strahd to his hibernation. Every century, Irina is resurrected to torture Strahd and punish him for his past. Every 100 years... she dies. And Strahd directs vengeance upon Barovia. And then Victavio is right. He returns to rest. But that does not make him any weaker or easier to kill.
Wunderbar.
And he kind of, as he says this, like the whole time he says this, he's been like sort of fading in or out. So that conversation we've just had probably has taken over half an hour, because mm-hmm. he'll say a word and then he'll kind of fade and then he'll come back and then continue talking. So it's almost like either he's like out of sync with time, or that he just doesn't have the energy to actually coalesce so that you can see him.
Right.
Before long, actually not before long, probably after a very, very long time.
time to the end?
You manage to reach the causeway, so that it gets shallower and shallower and shallower, and you pull yourself out. Water pouring out of your armor, followed by black silt and probably a few unpleasant creatures as well that flop out of your armor, and you haul yourself onto the causeway, not too far from the crater that has been left by the wagon's explosion. Where did you leave Irina? Just out of curiosity, where did you imagine she'd
reasonably
be?
Near the wagon? Being honest here.
Being honest.
Regretfully being honest. Tentatively.
Okay. Well, let's just let the fate decide. So give me that roll again, but let's roll it for Irina.
61.
Okay, so you make your way to the crater that was once...
Irina.
And now she's just Eileen.
the crater that was where the wagon was, and you see a white form, and you realise that this is the armoured body of Sergei von Zarevich, and it's wearing exactly the same armour that you're wearing, and he is kneeling over the form of Irina, his like hands in his face. And as you approach, you realise that the damage that you took, that was maybe both absorbed by your armour but also your incredibly tough dwarven form, crashed into Irina with full force, and the explosion, the fire and the shrapnel has wreaked a terrible fate upon Irina, and the bloody form that lies before you, there's no way it could be alive.
Jesus Christ. Way to go, Dave. Way to go.
good times.
Just kind of dazed and confused at this point. So the wagon is just gone. There's a crater. Yeah.
And lying amongst the flames is the broken form of Irina.
Broken and bloodied. Now, any sort of attachment I had to what's a snout, because of the armor, is gone now, right?
But as you look at him, he seems to be ignoring you.
Right. I guess my immediate reaction is just to walk up with him and give him a good shove. It's like, why did you let this happen?
And I think your hand kind of like passes through him, and he's like, he looks more insubstantial now than he has when you've seen him before.
Hmm. So I'm just like playing with a hologram off of Star Trek, just wait, hands going through.
And I guess maybe as your anger takes over, you go back and forth, and as the sort of minutes fly by, his form fades and you are left. And I guess the flames of the burning wagon sort of gutter in the wind, and eventually you are left in just darkness with the corpse of Irina lying in front of you.
Just in pure Eric mode, just Scheiße. And just start walking down the causeway.
Let's move back to Vorn and Viesa. So after descending through the void into the mists, you find yourself in a sunny forest. Viesa particularly, you notice that the trees are completely different. These are deciduous trees. They're tall and elegant. Look over an absolutely beautiful summer valley. Definitely not Barovia. This is a completely different landscape entirely. You can hear somewhere to your left, there's the sound of a stream or maybe a river. To your right, you can see a path sort of zigzagging in amongst the trees and heading off downhill. The sound of birds are amongst you, and you feel warm and at peace. And you look over to Voron, and to your shock, you don't see the ghoulish figure that you've seen all along, and you see a... I don't know, Voron, what's your actual form look like? It's been so long since we've had Voron.
I'm a half-elf, lightly pale, brown long hair, about shoulder length, usually tied up, and yeah.
So you notice a reasonably handsome half-elven figure with shoulder-length brown hair staring around in awe and wonder. He's dressed in wizard robes, which are fine rather than tatty and decrepit.
I'm, like, looking and down at my arm, just, like, so excited, just so happy. I'm like... I look back at her and I'm just like, look! I pull my hair, it doesn't fall out.
You're you. And Viesa just kind of, her ears blush red and kind of twitch. And she, I'll just inhale and kind of take it all in and see if it looks familiar to my childhood or looks like I know at all where this might be.
No, neither of you have been here before. Though, I mean, you're just in a beautiful forest. Like, it could
I'm
be
like looking for berries, and like I find some, and I show them to the VS. I'm like, are these? Oh. Can I eat these? Will they kill me?
Am I still a bear?
No, you're in your natural form.
I'll look, and if they're okay to eat, I'll let him eat them.
Let's say they are. I eat them. They're delicious. I'm just like, ah, yes.
Is this real? Is this place? Yeah. Are we hallucinating? Is this...
Do I still have the book?
So one thing you notice, again, with your both high passive perception, although you've taken the berries and enjoyed them, when you look down, the berries are still there.
Okay. Do I still have the book?
You still have
and
the book.
And what does it look like now? Blank page or like a void?
There is only one thing written. I am the ancient. I am the land. My beginnings are lost in the darkness of the past.
Dude, is any of our gear, like, is my broom here or is anything like that around?
Only the things that you literally had in your hand is there. So your broom's not there.
If I reach out for the berries again, will they pass through my hand or I can pick them up?
You pick them as normal, but then you kind of look and it's almost... And they're still there. Like, it's a very weird sensation or very weird perception.
I don't like... This is beautiful, and I don't like it. I love it, but I don't like it. I'm going to cast Protection from Evil and Good on myself.
Okay.
I think... it might be a memory of his somehow manifest, or... I don't know what it is, but let's see if we can find anything here. Because if we can find a clue about anything to do with his past, we might be able to do something in a present to stop him. And personally, if we're outside of this land and I'm me again, then that's what I want to do. That's what I want to look for.
Okay. Yes. Yes, you look wonderful. And she'll twitch an ear and blush again. You look lovely.
Let's go investigate. Follow. You said there was a path zigzagging through.
Yeah. So there's a path heading to your right, and then to your left, you can hear the sound of running water, maybe a stream or a river.
If we pass any other berries or things, I'll like try to pluck a leaf or pluck a berry and see if it happens again.
Yeah. So. It seems that so when you pull a leaf off, you still feel it in your hand. It feels absolutely real. You can feel the warm air upon your body. You feel the twigs and leaves crunch under your feet as you follow the path. But when you look again, you notice that where the leaf had been plucked, it's still there, though it's still in your hand as well.
I get goosebumps and the hairs on the back of my neck go up and my ears get warm and I'm just I point it out to him if he doesn't notice that this is... But silently, I kind of point out what's happening.
Not acknowledgement. Just kind of continue on towards the path.
Yeah.
Okay, so the path is well traveled. It winds in and out between the trees. Maybe you see sort of various animals and birds and things, but nothing massively unusual, nothing that really tells you very much about the area. You see a few deer. You do begin to hear a sound, which is kind of like a thud. And you recognize it immediately as an arrow striking a target, or arrows striking targets. Probably coming from not too far away. Walking a little bit further, you look down and you see in the distance, in a kind of a little sort of shallow dip, someone has set up an archery target, and shooting arrows into it is a boy, maybe of about 7 or 8. The longbow he has in his hands is really too big for him. Really, it's a man's weapon. But nonetheless, he is trying his best. He will empty his quiver. In fact, as you walk towards him, or as you stand still, depending on what you decide, he pulls one arrow after another from his quiver and sends them towards the target. You notice not one of them strikes into the center target at all.
Is he human or what is he?
Yeah.
He's a young, sort of richly dressed, sort of noble-looking human with closely cropped dark hair. As you step a bit closer and see that his hands are bloody, from particularly his wrist, where he's trying to, from repeated shots against the arrow.
I'm going to quietly cast guidance on his next shot. See if I can help him.
Nice. Okay. Well, let's see if he takes that. So, what does guidance do? Is it 1d6?
D6 or D4? I think it's a D4. It's a buff, and it is a D4.
Is it just a skill check, or is it also just to?
It's D4 to check to see if he can hit the target.
So it's an ability check.
Oh yeah, ability.
So unfortunately, it doesn't help with an attack roll. If you have bless,
I that do would have give bless. I'll give him a little bless. I'll give him a little. It's just gonna sound like a little rustle of leaves in the breeze, like aspens chiming.
The arrow strikes true, and it just hits in the center red of the target, just crossing over. And he jumps in the air and whoops, and then, as he does, he half turns and sees you both standing there. And for a moment, the kind of joy that crosses his face is then sort of covered with alarm. And he starts knocking his arrow, but he's not a warrior in any way, shape or form. And he struggles to notch the arrow. And for one moment, you stand in shock as you realise the features are familiar. This is almost certainly either Strahd von Zarovich himself, or a very, very close relation.
I use Mage Hand to just slap the arrow out of his hand quickly.
Well, I actually think that's a really, really good point to leave the episode. So I think we will leave Auric standing above, walking away from Eric walking away from the corpse of Irina along the darkening causeway through the mists towards the edge of the lake. And I think we'll leave Viesa and Voron in the depths of the Tome of Strahd facing off against the young boy. So thank you, all of you, for playing. This has been a very interesting episode. And thank you, everyone at home, for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the experience. My name is Joe Trier. If you want to get in contact with me, you can find me at HWR Podcast on Twitter. You can find me on our Discord, and you can find me on the Facebook page. If you want to contact me by email for any way, shape or form, you can find me at howwerollpodcast@gmail.com. Lisa, how can people get in contact with you and anything you'd like to share or talk about?
You can find me at Lisa Bell on Twitter, LISABELLE. You can find me on the How We Roll Discord. And you can go fight face off with me in Devil May Cry 5, and go play through the demos of Dying Light 2, and you'll encounter several of me.
Amazing. And Dave, thank you again for playing and for making this story very, very interesting. how can people get in contact with you? Is there anything you want to share?
You can't particularly. I am occasionally on the Discord. Poke Joe, if you really need to get a message to me. He filters and transfers. Yeah, that's about it. I appreciate everyone who listens. I'm just a social media hermit.
Amazing. And last but by no means least, thank you, Niall, for playing. And anything you want to share, talk about, or any way people can get in contact with you?
Nothing to share or talk about, as usual. I'm not the most exciting person. But yeah, if you ever want to reach out to me, you can find me on the Discord. And as Owen has been tagging me more and more on Twitter, I'm seeing more stuff. So I'm at Blaga, B-L-A-G-H-A, if you ever want to find me or tweet me on Twitter. And I might get back to you. I don't really know how it works, though. So
well, thank you again for playing, and thank you everyone at home for listening. We'll be back next time with Two-Headed Serpent, and the week after that with more Curse of Strahd. If you can't wait till then, and you want to help support the show as well, then please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/howwerollpodcast. And a huge thank you to everyone who supports us. You really massively keep the show going. And a big thank you to our newest supporters, Hazel and Rose. If you can't spare any money to support the show, you can still help us out. We don't pay any advertising, and the only way we get out to new listeners like yourselves is by word of mouth. So if you can write us a review, especially on iTunes, or share us a friend, you really help us get the show out there and keep us going. We want to mention our friends over at Total Party Chill, who are fast becoming one of the most popular D&D streams in the world. Their D&D Devon was awesome fun in LA when me and Owen met him, and I really want you to support that show. So you can catch them every Sunday at 5 p.m. PST, 2 p.m. EST, for their weekly Twitch game, and the link to that is in the show notes. Lastly, our partners at Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms have another gold chest for all How We Roll listeners. It's a great game, really addictive, really fun, loads of really familiar D&D characters, and all you need to do it is log into the game, which is free, by the way, and enter this code, HILDHASHNEWS. So that is all from us, and until next time, take care.